We're continuing the story and stylistic trajectory of our previous releases with all the same members and instrumentation, but under the new moniker, Coyote Kid, named after the anti-hero of the post-apocalyptic Western tale we're telling in this new album. We hope that you will join us as we embark on this new adventure and the daunting challenge of bringing the music we love to the worldwide audience. We can't do any of it without you.
Darkness to Light, hosted by Alan and M. Middleton.
We aim to explore what takes place at the corner of theology and geekology.
Episode 29, Feedback, Current Events, and Shoutouts.
Welcome to episode 29 of Darkness to Light. This is our show where we take a look at pop culture, in terms of where those stories intersect with concepts in religion, faith, theology, spirituality.
And in this episode, we are going to be going through a lot of feedback, because we have not been able to have feedback on the last several episodes, and as a result, it has really piled up.
Yes. But first, there are some current events that we wanted to discuss, some things that touched on our areas of interests, and we do have to start sad.
Yes, that recently the writer and theologian and blogger Rachel Held Evans passed away at the very young age of 37.
She was really one of the first, I would say, sort of Christian bloggers who really broke through and had an impact within the church and outside the church, and I think really spoke to millennial concerns in addition to bringing social justice and progressive issues, a voice for feminism within Christianity, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, she was really the leader of the young progressive voice within the church, and it was just a very, very quick turn that I think I saw on, I don't know, a Monday, that she had been hospitalized and she passed away the following Saturday. It was it was maybe a week at most. And it was just, it was very sad. And in the couple of weeks since then, there's been a big outpouring of love and sympathy from a variety of people, messages from her husband, Dan.
Who is awesome.
Who is awesome, as anyone who has read The Year of Biblical Womanhood knows that Dan is, in fact, awesome. Can confirm. Nadia Boltz-Weber wrote several pieces in her memory, gave the eulogy at her service. It was very, very sad, but also touching to see sort of the young progressive church sort of coming together around this person who meant so much to all of us and who passed away far too young.
Absolutely. And another current event featuring another important female voice in the evangelical world. So in the battle of Beth Moore versus the Southern Baptist Convention, our official unanimous stand at Darkness to Light is that we are with Beth Moore. And I don't think either one of us has ever heard her speak or read a book of hers.
I don't know if at
Christian school or anywhere.
I don't think so.
Mom has.
She's definitely
We have books in the house.
Yeah. She's definitely been hosted by our church numerous times. Yeah. She's, you know, a prolific speaker and lecturer and, you know, writes dozens and dozens of books about theology and Bible studies and some self-help books. And she's just never really been my cup of tea. That she is more conservative than you.
Right.
Which makes her significantly more conservative than me. And as a result, I've always just sort of been like, you know what, Beth Moore? Just
you do you.
Do your own thing. It's cool, but you and I, our paths shall never meet.
But that doesn't matter.
And quite recently, those paths have converged very briefly, because if you or I are on Twitter and Beth Moore is popping up in our sphere, it is...
Something is happening.
Some big thing has happened, because she is just not on our radar. This particular controversy has been brewing for about a month, where she took to Twitter and put together a truly epic thread expressing her frustration with fellow members of the Southern Baptist Convention in particular, and with the church in general, calling out abuse, bias, and passive misogyny in the theology of the Southern Baptist Church. And, oh man, it was, oh, it was incredible. It was phenomenal to read her sort of fully putting her experiences with being, from what we would always see, is like she is the face of like women's theology and like women's leadership in the church. And behind closed doors, she was that woman who never got invited to anything, constantly talked down to, ignored, disrespected by her fellow members of the Southern Baptist Convention. And eventually she had just kind of had enough and decided, you know what, I'm just going to take them all to task on this, because she started, you know, over the last couple of years, reaching out more to other women in the church and asking about ways that they had been hurt by the church. Abuses, neglect, dismissal of their gifts and talents and skills and opinions and voices. And the more that she put this together, the more she realized how widespread this just casual misogyny within, again, the Southern Baptist Convention specifically, but within many sects of Christianity, how bad it has been for how long. And that once sort of one person starts speaking up, that very much in the Me Too.
In the spirit of joining and multiple female voices being more powerful,
sharing their experiences, she realized really how almost universal this experience was. And it's been just incredible to watch her kind of be basically done being nice to a certain degree, because putting this out on the internet then immediately made her a target, and watching the way that she has just planted herself and in a very, very Peggy Carter move has said, no, you move. It's been beautiful to watch as just like the waves of the conservative internet crashing against her, and she's just like, no, I know I'm right. That's been incredible.
What I admired in that sort of first barrage of Twitter that she did was talking about how meaningful the Southern Baptist Convention has been to her. She became a Christian as a Southern Baptist at a youth camp or something, and has been in the denomination her whole life, and basically ended with, I'm going to stay here in this group as long as they'll have me. Like you said, your move. If you feel you need to kick me out, that's on you. I'm not leaving.
Yeah.
And there's something admirable.
Definitely.
I think, there's a lot admirable in that, I think.
And a lot of this goes back to a specific concept about the world, which is common within certain more conservative sects of Christianity, which is complementarianism, which places a very strong emphasis on traditional gender norms, male head of household, women not speaking power to men. This is not to say that there has never been anything beautiful or whatever within like complementarianism. Some people have certainly talked about, oh, well, this is meaningful to me for whatever reasons. Cool. Okay, great. But if your theology at any point would look at Mary Magdalene and say you're doing Christianity wrong, like you missed the mark. You missed the mark. And that's a big thing that had been a problem for Beth Moore is that if there were men and women in attendance, some places would not host her because they would not let a woman be the leader of male followers.
Yeah, her biggest mistake was getting too popular and actually having the temerity to be invited to speak to mixed gatherings. I guess her mistake is answering that call. And the real kickoff of this recent one was where she had been invited and accepted invitations to actually preach on Sunday mornings from a pulpit, which within complementarianism, that's, you are pushing up against the boundaries. And she had been moving that way, but over the years, and to some extent, actually some of the new leadership within the Southern Baptist Convention had been moving that direction. But I think that was the bridge too far for the more traditional or hard complementarians within the convention. And as we record this, it is Father's Day. It is also Beth Moore's birthday, I learned on Twitter.
Oh, well, there and you go.
That confluence of events with this going on has led to the hashtag that I have seen, hashtag let her preach.
It is baffling to think of sometimes that this even is a controversy.
Yeah. I'm so glad that the church we go to landed on the side of egalitarianism
yeah.
in terms of this issue about 12, 14 years ago. And I will tell you, I have been ministered to and blessed so much by some of the female pastors we have at our church doing ministry, including preaching the weekend services. And it is, I've learned so much. It's been a blessing. I wouldn't want to be in another type of situation.
Mm-hmm. We all become stronger.
Yes.
When we are allowed to use our strengths.
When our denomination went that direction, our pastor was one of the stronger voices in favor of that. And when that resolution or position paper came out, remember he preached a sermon and it opened with, I won't get the middle part exact, I'm sure, but it was something on the order of the sermon opened with 1:17:51. There's one Bible verse that is the primary argument against women as pastors and leaders. There are 17 hermeneutical and translational issues with that verse, and it's held back 51% of the population from utilizing their gifts in the church. I've heard a lot of sermons. That's about the only one whose beginning I remember. Very powerful.
It's hard to beat that. So, in memoriam, rest in peace, Rachel Held Evans.
Beth Moore.
Keep on. Keep on doing.
Yes.
Rise in power.
We did want to talk about a few other things here, and I have a couple of podcast recommendations that I wanted to make. One is called Time Eternal, hosted by Nicole Rokas, who's a writer and professor within the Orthodox Church. Always like to mention this, short episodes.
Yes.
Easy to catch up on. And it's about how concepts related to time affect our faith and our life. And it seems like a kind of a weird, esoteric, academic topic.
And it is.
And sometimes it is. But she really wrings a ton out of that. So I suggest that, Time Eternal. And through the wonders of the Twitter feed and recommendations and so on, I stumbled onto the A Christian Gaming podcast, hosted by Raina Swiftsage.
Owner of the coolest name on planet Earth.
My understanding is that she had done some other YouTube and podcasterly gaming things before sort of rebranding and moving her faith into those discussions more. But yes, it's a pretty cool name. Raina Swiftsage. She's got about 15 episodes out, and again, 30 to 40 minute range. They cover news in the gaming world, her own gaming experiences for that week or the time since the last episode, a brief Bible study or devotional, and some humor.
Very important for us.
And then my last recommendation comes from our friend Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist. So a few months ago, he turned me on to one of his favorite podcasts, hosted by Mike from the early days of Mystery Science Theater 3000, a.k.a. Michael J. Nelson. The show was called Like Trees Walking, which is a New Testament reference. New Testament reference shared by one of our favorite bands.
Men as Trees Walking. Shout out.
So in this podcast, which has many more episodes, it's been going for a number of years. This falls into the where have you been all my life situation. But Mike and his pastor take on one big question of life or faith each episode, and then they do something silly for the second half of the episode.
Nice.
So 30 to 40 minute episodes again, and thanks for letting me know that that one even exists, Jared. Good job. And thanks for thinking that it would be of interest to me, because you were right.
Let's see. What else has been happening? Let's see. Is there something that's really big on, like, Twitter, Tumblr? It's maybe, like, a really well-known series with big actors, big names behind it. Oh, right! Good Omens.
Now, this is one that you had been watching, and we were going to talk about it at some point. But very specifically, you also had a request.
Yes.
From a listener. To share your feelings on Good Omens.
Nathaniel Wayne did hit me up privately on Facebook and say, please tell me that you've watched Good Omens. And I was like, oh, of course I've watched Good Omens. And he was like, oh my God, Good Omens. So if you haven't watched Good Omens, sign up for the 7-day free trial or whatever.
Amazon?
It's on Amazon. Go watch it. There's only 6 episodes and it's brilliant.
You could also go to Amazon and buy the book.
Yes, you can.
That it's based on Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. Is that right?
That is correct. Again, not to be a downer, but there was some really sweet stuff in the wake of the release of Good Omens. Because when they did the big, like, premiere of the first episode, Neil brought Terry's hat and scarf.
Yeah.
Put it on the front seat. Like, oh my gosh. It was so sweet. Neil Gaiman has a Tumblr, which is just, like, the funniest thing in the world. Because occasionally you'll be in the tag reading through some Good Omens stuff and someone will have a really good take. And then you'll get to the end and then you go, I wonder who that was. And you roll back up and it was Neil himself, Gaiman. Yeah. And you're like, oh.
Wow, that was a pretty well-written Tumblr post. Surprising.
Oh, shucky, that's very insightful and well-written. It's also been very sweet because, you know, people, as a result, have been doing lots of questions and ask me anythings and things like that and hitting him up on Tumblr. And pretty much whenever anyone says, well, what would have happened with this, or what do you think about this, or what's your opinion of this, he basically always says, well, I'm not sure because the writer is deceased.
Mm-hmm.
He always gives, like, first shout out to Terry. He's yeah. like, nope, these are his characters, he wrote it, I was just along for a ride. And I'm like, oh. I also recently found out in an interview that Crowley's whole look is based off of 28-year-old Neil Gaiman.
Well, I can see, yeah.
Which is hysterical to me. Because Neil would always wear sunglasses indoors in the pub while they were writing. And whenever he got up to go to the bathroom, he'd walk into the wall. And Terry thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever seen.
Dream's look in Sandman.
Oh, yeah.
Is based on Neil Gaiman. All of those things flow together. This is now the 25-year-later version. I guess. Basic premise is the end of the world is coming, biblical Armageddon, and an angel and a demon who've kind of become buddies really don't want that to happen. They've got kind of a good thing going and plan to stop it.
Yeah, that's a really good rundown. Of course, it was going to be well written by Neil Gaiman. He was the active showrunner and reviewing all of the scripts. Like, it stars Michael Sheen and David Tennant. John Hamm.
So it was going to be well performed.
It was going to be beautifully performed, obviously. I don't know why I'm always surprised at how good Terry Pratchett's theology is, but Terry Pratchett has really good theology. It's an interesting thing that his theology in his books always comes from an atheist, humanist perspective, but because he is a good writer, he puts as much thought into the theological underpinnings of his world as he does any other aspect of his world. And as a result, it's always brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I have not read the book Good Omens. It's on my list. I'm going to start that probably this week.
I read it about 10 years ago, maybe, and thought, this is pretty good. That's about all the only memory that I have of it.
And I know that there are some differences. I know that the ending, there is a moment near the end that is rather different in the book. In the book, it's more about acceptance, kind of a Buddhist, mm-hmm. sort of like letting go of attachments and accepting what is going to happen, whereas it's more active mm-hmm. in the show, that it's more of a moment of resistance, like a call to action.
Right.
Both valid, but mm-hmm. I'm really interested in reading how it goes down in the book. But mm-hmm. I...
First season was pretty great.
Oh my god.
Is it just a first season or is it an adaptation?
It's a full adaptation, but it is still listed as a season one.
Okay.
So season one is everything that leads up to Armageddon and then what happens on the last day of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They have talked a little bit about possible ideas for season two. Neil is out. Neil right. showed up to just be show running for the first season while it was adapting the book, so that he could basically be there, as he put it, as a guardian of Terry's wish.
Yes. But once
that adaptation was done, then he was like, well, whatever you guys want to do going
prequel,
forward.
Prequel, sequel, sidequel, whatever you want.
That's up to you. You guys can do that. But I wanted to make sure that this story was told in the way that I right. felt it should be. And now you guys can just go. Which is actually very apt for the themes of the show. Let me shepherd you through this and then it's the rest of your life. Go for it. A lot of the first season had to do with heaven and hell as the two forces fighting against each other, and by the end, heaven and hell are actually to a certain degree on the same mm-hmm. side, in that they want Armageddon to happen, and humanity, right. Crowley and Aziraphale, don't really. Which means that the second season would probably actually be the forces of heaven and hell versus humanity, right. which I am quite intrigued by. It actually reminds me of a line from a Sufi, like mm-hmm. mystic and writer, but I know the quote from the last page of the book Habibi,
mm-hmm.
which is when asked how this saint would make the world a better place, he said the only tools he needed were a torch and a jug. A torch to burn paradise and a jug to drown the fires of hell, so that humanity would love not out of fear of retribution or hope for salvation, but purely of love.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I'm intrigued. There's a lot of good, half of it being wordplay, which of course Terry Pratchett is
yes.
the grand poobah of genius wordplay. But there is a lot of stuff going on in the Good Omens series about destiny and about free will.
Right, sure.
Because the whole point of this is that it is destiny. It begins...
Can it be stopped?
Yes, it begins at the fall. And from the moment of the fall, there is a plan.
Mm-hmm.
An ineffable plan. Which says that in 8,000 years, the world is going to end on a Wednesday. At this time, when the Antichrist summons all of the forces from the four corners of the earth and brings about Armageddon. That's how it's going to happen. Except that things keep going wrong along the way mm-hmm. to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But if the plan is ineffable, how can things go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good
stuff.
There's
room for asking a lot of questions.
There's also a very interesting thing, which again, I'm not sure this might be more explicit in the book or more mm-hmm. ambiguous in the book, but it is implied that the only person who actually knows the ineffable plan, because everybody else is just sort of muddling through. That's heaven, hell, Aziraphale. Everyone's just trying to figure out where they're supposed to be. The only person who actually knows what the plan is Crowley, the demon, aka the serpent from mm-hmm. Eden. Which I just really love as a concept mm-hmm. because there's been a lot of theology about that, about, well, if Pharaoh's heart was hardened,
mm-hmm.
was Pharaoh complicit? Was Pharaoh a pawn? If Judas had to betray Jesus,
mm-hmm.
what was his role? Did he know? Was he forced? What role do antagonists play in the plan? Mm-hmm. Because without the antagonist, the plan will never come to be. So how much should you sympathize with them and how much are they actually working towards the greater good through mm-hmm. their antagonism? There's some good stuff. Some good there's some really good stuff there. And of course, I love Crowley. He's played by David Tennant. He's super charismatic and delightful.
See, to me, you could also argue that knowing that is an additional punishment. Because it's a heavy burden to know that.
Oh, it is. And it is.
That's an interesting thought as well.
It's also implied, again, that that is the reason that he fell. Mm-hmm. Is that he did his part. And then when asked why he had to do his part is when he was cast out.
Mm.
And that basically he was the first and last person that God told the plan. Because when God told him the plan, he started questioning the plan. And then the plan wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. I like thinking about those things.
It's also a very good, well-executed show.
Well, keep us posted. If there is a season 2, let us know about that. I do have one Terry Pratchett story.
Go for it.
That in his waning days, it had been announced that he would be knighted. And I don't know if this last part actually came to be, but his plan was to forge the sword himself.
God.
That the queen would knight him with.
God, which is such what a legend.
Terry Pratchett move.
What a legend.
I don't know what happened with all of that, but that was the plan.
God. Incredible. Incredible. Fantastic. So there is a possibility for a future Actual Good Omens episode.
Yep.
I think it's more likely that it is going to be part
mm-hmm.
of a future episode. I really want to do an episode on eschatology. Just general.
That'd be great. Yep.
General eschatology.
That'd be great.
This is going to be a good one because it sort of follows along our general rule of thumb. You and me, Christians in general, have more in common with an agnostic than a Gnostic.
There's truth to that.
It's one of those things of, huh, it's weird. This atheist humanist wrote stuff about metaphysical politics and theology and the nature of good, evil, free will, and destiny. And I actually like the way that he did his end of the world theology more than Jerry B. Jenkins and Tim LaHaye, even though theoretically should have more in common with them.
I was not a believer in Y2K, end of the millennia, all of that. But the nice thing was it spawned a lot of fiction. Both from, as you said, Christian evangelical standpoints, but also other, you know, mainstream writers of thrillers and more literary works also took the opportunity in the late 90s to write that type of fiction. I remember reading a dozen or so of those books. I mean, counting Left Behind as one.
Yeah.
A dozen or so other books in that general genre. And it was really fascinating seeing all the different aspects. So give me a little time to prepare. I would be up for that episode.
Excellent. Yeah, this should surprise no one. We enjoy post-apocalyptic work. We really like apocalyptic
work. Yeah, that is the problem with post-apocalyptic work. They often skip the apocalypse. That's kind of one of the important parts of post-apocalyptic.
That's kind of the thing that you and I are actually pretty dang interested in.
All right, we also have a couple of updates wanted to pass on to you. It's a long story that's mostly about the way we set up this podcast and the feed and lots of behind-the-scenes stuff, but cut to the chase and say we have a new website for our blog. Now, this only applies if you are a reader of our blog.
By which we mean Dave McElvaney.
And maybe a dozen or so others of the chosen few. There is a post on the old blog that will direct you, but the new blog is darknesstolightblog.blogspot.com.
So all of the podcast episodes are still hosted at the original website, but due to feed nonsense, we were having trouble actually keeping our episodes available in iTunes and other podcatchers.
Yep. Again, it's a long story. But I stopped blogging about 5 or 6 months ago because adding blog posts on the blog deleted podcast episodes from the feed. And it took until the summer to sort of be able to work around that and figure that out.
Take the time to sort of figure out that nitty-gritty side of things.
the way we did it was to not mess up anyone's podcast feed. So you don't have to resubscribe or anything like that. But if you're interested in the blog, it has a new address.
Yes. So if you're interested in the funny comics, occasional things, Dead Theologian Society might be making a comeback
comic
now.
Comic book reviews every now and then. Bible Alan's, studies via...
Was it Alan's Christian Comic Corner?
Christian Comic Corner. Bible study via pop culture.
Yep.
So, I'm looking at you, Fox Mulder, mostly.
Mostly. And Batman, weirdly. So... all of that stuff will finally be making a return.
And I will return to adding more stuff to that.
Yes. In the meanwhile, that means that all of the blog-related stuff has been on your Twitter and my Tumblr. So, if anyone does want more Good Omens content, by which I mean Nathaniel Wayne, that has basically been all that I have been reblogging for about a week.
DarknessDelight.tumblr.com.
On DarknessDelight.tumblr.com.
Wanted to give a shout out to the Audio Feed Festival, which we have mentioned in the past. We did an episode about it, but we're not going this year. But I did want to mention a cool thing that they're adding this year, which sort of harkens back to the seminars that really made the old Cornerstone Fest stand out. For a few hours, each of the 3 days, I guess one of the tents will be doing what they're calling Justice, Mercy, Humility, an Audio Feed Conference. And Shane Claiborne is the headline speaker, and the artist Propaganda will be back.
Big props to Prop.
And will be participating in a half dozen or so others. And our hope is that it's a success this year, but there are also like a few problems and be a few kinks that they have to work out. So when we go back next year, it'll be even better, even bigger, and run perfectly.
Yeah, that's the goal. That's the goal, is that this will be their trial run. And next year we'll get to go and maybe participate a little bit. Who knows?
So, seriously, we do hope that that goes well enough that a conference of some kind becomes an ongoing part of that fest.
That was always something that we really enjoyed, that we were a little sad with the ending of Cornerstone.
Have lost that.
But now it looks like it's making
a comeback.
So
Audio Feed's building it back up and growing a little bit. It may have room for that.
And we have an update about Nate Allen, the musician that we talked to in episode 27.
He said that the initial stress of the album has passed. So there's a peace in knowing that parts of him that had been hidden have now been broadcast. It's definitely been a healing process. I've learned so much about myself. The reaction has been really great from folks who've heard it. I'll be at Audio Feed in July, and then I'm doing a few weeks of tours in August. After that, it's going to be a pretty quiet fall. We're working on things in and around Kansas City for the fall and spring.
There are also a couple of time-sensitive things, which only apply to those listening when this is a fresh episode in June of 2019. Mara in the Mainsail has a new Kickstarter, which you heard a little bit of at the start of this episode. We covered their first album, Thaumatrope, on episode 15. And this is not just a new album with a new Kickstarter, but also a new name. The band is now going to be called Coyote Kid, which is a reflection of the new story that they are going to be telling with this next album, The Skeleton Man. This is a chance to sort of rebrand, restart, but still continue what they've been working on before, but making it something new going forward. Same musicians, same instrumentation.
That's one thing I wanted to know about. Are they still going to have the big marching band drum?
And 40-foot chain?
In the chain. Okay.
Answer?
Yes. This I picked up from their website where they said, "We'll always be thankful for the memories we have as Mara and the Mainsail, and every piece of Mara merch we see will always put a smile on our faces. But we want to give this new music the best chance to succeed. Our music, members, and style are all staying exactly the same, but now under a more intentional name."
I would not be surprised if some of this is just because everyone always misheard their name as Mara and the Mainsail.
It's possible.
I mean, it's a cool name. I love it. But as we know, darkness to light. Not from darkness to light.
Not darkness,
not darkness to light.
You have to get that exactly right. One of the things that Austin said was that, you know, they came up with the band in high school, and it had a more of a pirate vibe to it. And so that's where the more nautical name came from, as they're sort of moving more Western, that sort of vibe, than a different name sort of was maybe a more appropriate.
And also, because this band is huge on their story albums, mm-hmm. there is also going to be a time skip that comes with mm-hmm. this. The ending of Bone Crown, their previous album, ended with a literal apocalyptic wildfire that burned the world to ashes.
Spoilers!
So let me just say, for anyone who thought that Thaumatrope was Ooh. Too dark, depressing, and disturbing...
And we got a couple albums for you!
Woo! Oh boy! Oh boy!
So the new one, The Skeleton Man, as they said, begins... So you said hundreds of years later, the world is wild and untamed as civilization is slowly rebuilding from the ashes. We follow the story of the Coyote Kid, the Bloodhound, and the Medicine Crow as they traverse this new dark age under the watchful eyes of the Skeleton Man.
I'm looking forward to this one because let me just say, that legitimately sounds like a breath of fresh air after the pure, bleak destruction that was Bone Crown.
For this new effort, they're looking to raise $10,000 in a campaign that expires on July 7th. All of the things that we have mentioned, we will post in the blog post for the episode.
Yes. Another musician that we wanted to give a shout out to is Jeff Anderson, who has a new album coming out soon as well. We actually mention this guy on every episode because he is half of the duo Anderson Kale.
Which half? Oh, the Anderson half.
The Anderson half. And provides our intro, outro, and promo music. As a solo artist, his style is somewhat different, more modern church music. His campaign is running through July 15th, also looking to raise $10,000, but this is an Indiegogo, so whatever he manages to raise is what he will use going forward and based on pre-orders and such like.
And Jeff Anderson, he worked for a little while at our church.
Yes, he did.
And so Mom has met him.
He's very nice.
Adding to the long list of people that Mom has met. I don't know if we've mentioned on this show.
But she
doesn't know Mumford & Sons, but she knows their parents.
Yeah.
Former NBA basketball player Michael Redd. Yeah, she's met him. Worship master David Crowder. Yeah, she's been in a room with him, had a meeting, chatted with him. Us, actual podcasters in the sphere of Christian pop culture and related media? No. No. I mean, we're not jealous.
Well,
it's a good thing we love her.
We're also hermits.
This is where our introversion and her extroversion actually does work. It really does work for her. Okay. We're going to take a break here, and we'll play some music by Jeff Anderson. And when we come back, we are turning the show over to you, our lovely listeners.
And we're back. Because we have awesome listeners who regularly send us awesome feedback, it's time to go through the big old bag of emails, faxes, and notes.
And first up, we have to start with a recent DM we got from our good friend, Kirk, who we met last year at HeroesCon. Just took up the offering at church with my fly down. I can never come here again.
No, you can't. To take the one legitimate piece of wisdom that my brother, and me ever gave, you need to pack your bags and move away. You can never make eye contact with any of these people again as long as you live.
I do love the fact that we were the people he felt he could share this vital information with, that somehow he knew we'd understand. We're a safe space.
You know what, Kirk? We are with you.
Now, I did ask permission if I could share that on the show, and he replied, go ahead. I wanted to step out to zip up, since there's no way to do that without folks knowing what you're doing. On the way out, I had two more folks stop me and tell me, after the first one did, which was just what I needed.
No, that's a bad day. We can only hope that this incident will be immediately forgotten and not become part of your local church lore.
I don't know if Kirk's is the kind of church that has the homecoming celebrations, you know, every summer, but if so, expect when 50 years from now, they'll be telling that story, buddy. You know it.
Sometimes church family is just family. We also wanted to tip our cap to listener Ron Smith, who shouted out to us while he was listening to the Star Wars episode, which he said he was having a blast listening to. In his tweet, he recommended our show to Professor James McGrath, a.k.a. the host of the Religion Prof podcast.
Which I started listening to right that moment.
Heartily recommended. That podcast talks about the Bible, religious studies, and theology, which is, in fact, what Professor McGrath teaches at Butler University.
Mostly religious studies, which is interesting. Because he gets into some sort of modern Christian things and church culture and that sort of thing. But mostly it's about how to study things in church, translations and various things like that. So it's very interesting. And he is a huge pop culture fan.
Excellent. The show also weaves in things he's interested in, like science fiction, futurism, technology, transhumanism, stuff like that. Transhumanism is actually the theme of Imaginopolis at AudioFeed
this year.
Again, it sucks. We can only go to half of these.
Next year.
But we're very excited about what AudioFeed's coming up with next year.
We love listening to smart people talk about religious stuff.
Yes.
And so thanks to Ron for connecting me with the Religion Prof. Again, those podcast episodes run about 45, 50 minutes. And there are about 40 of them. I caught up with him in a couple of months. It's very doable. That's always the it's doable.
Diving into our email feedback, we wanted to start with this email because it proves that we are serious, that we will take feedback on any episode, no matter how old the episode or the email. This one comes from Steve Rogers. Not that Steve Rogers. If you listen to our other podcast on the Relatively Geeky Network, you may remember this is not the first time we've had an email that starts with this sentence, cleaning out my drafts, and I found an unsent email. Professor and M, just dropping a line to say how much I'm enjoying this show so far. I like the concept of this show. Maybe it's the communities I've come across in nearly 20 years that I've been going in and out of various sci-fi and comic book internet communities, but the overall lack of faith among members and sometimes outright anger or ridicule of organized religion and practices in some corners often make me wonder if there really is such a disconnect between the love of all things geeky and some system of faith. And not just in recent ongoing debates about how New Age atheists make it seem like if you believe in science, you can't believe in a higher power, etc., etc. And having a show like this is certainly refreshing. Especially for someone that will enjoy a good discussion about theology as much as he will about the history and criticism of a sci-fi show or comic book, and of course sports as well, which probably can be seen as close to secular religion as you can get. I'm sure you both understand, being in the Buckeye State.
Oh yes.
O-H.
I-O.
It's a call and response.
Even has its own liturgy.
Anyway, I like the suggestions that people have brought up and the list that is already expanding. Though I'm surprised Star Trek got bumped off of the pedestal of religion in sci-fi operas done right. Well, DS9 anyway. Granted, Babylon 5 deserves that distinction.
Darn right it does.
But I think the Star Trek franchise as a whole's relationship with religion could be worth discussing. Heck, Roddenberry's never-ending desire to tell deities to go F off, which went off the rails in TNG's Who Watches the Watchers, could take up an entire episode in and of itself. And despite the line, what does God need with a starship, I don't think Gene had much involvement in Star Trek V. Now, DS9 was a much more nuanced show for religion and spirituality, complete with political intrigue that featured ambition versus the desire to do some spiritual good. Of course, this could end the DS9 versus Bab 5 debate in terms of lead characters. John Sheridan may have been the one who is, and Michael Sinclair the one who was. But both pretty much were more a prophet than a god, unlike Sisko, who was a legit Bajoran deity by the end of DS9.
Spoilers. Well, yes, on Babylon 5, of course, that is on the short list, and has been for as long as we started thinking about this podcast.
Literally day one.
Back when Steve drafted that email.
5 years ago.
Let that be a lesson. Hey, check out that drafts folder every now and then.
You never know what's lost in there.
Neil Stanifer wrote in with a general comment for us. So I'm assuming the two of you have had a chance to view the second season of Netflix's Luke Cage. What do you think of Luke's dad as compared to Father Latte? There's certainly a racial element, but apart from that, I'm interested in the divide between high church and low church as it intersects with socio-political divisions. Different congregations exist for very complex reasons.
Very astute.
The compare and contrast for Luke Cage is pretty interesting, as he said. And we do see a lot more of Father Latte's church in season 3 of Daredevil, which had not aired when Neil sent this in. Both are in poor neighborhoods, you know, poor congregations, but they are very different and the ministries are different. That's a good point. And every time I try to make this comparison, I hate myself for having to bring up Black Lightning. But they're similar in many ways, so it's fair to do it. And the church and the pastor in Black Lightning has some very nice bits of Black culture weaved into that church as well. I think the importance of the pastor as neighborhood leader, the church as community center, those sorts of things. So I think that show does it really well as Luke Cage.
Right. I will admit I have not seen Luke Cage season 2, but I do. Mm-hmm. I do love the pastor from Black Lightning.
Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Moving on to feedback for particular episodes. Justin Davis responded to our conversation about Over the Garden Wall way back in episode 9. This is just as enjoyable to listen to in April as it was in October.
Good.
It has become an annual harvest time traditional listen for me. I would love to hear more on similar topics, maybe something around magic in both pop culture and the Bible. Interesting that two of the most famous comic writers are practicing magic users, being Grant Morrison and Alan Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Also another opportunity to talk about, as a Christian, where you draw the line between creator and work.
It's an interesting point about Morrison and Moore.
Yeah. Too. This episode was released way before, and I'm sure this feedback mm-hmm. was probably also sent a while ago. But I did mention in one of our Halloween mm-hmm. episodes, I know a lot of witches.
That's
I've had like 4 more people tell me that they are witches since that episode came out. And I'm like, man, I'm glad I was nice to y'all on our episode.
Exactly, see? We also have one here from YouTuber Vera Wild, our favorite burlesque queen and untamed spirit. She touches on a few of her older episodes, as a matter of fact. Dearest Middletons. Dearest Vera. You knew it would happen. It's feedback on the feedback of feedback.
Ugh.
I really enjoy hearing M read my feedback. Sorry.
Ha! Too late.
They're really good at making me sound intelligent.
That's my job.
Plus, it was wonderful hearing everything else written by your lovely listeners, and served as yet another reminder that I need to get around to watching Prince of Egypt. Yes.
Definitely.
You do. Maybe after I finish catching up on The Good Place. Have you guys seen The Good Place? You should watch The Good Place.
We need to watch The Good Place.
As soon as Vera watches Prince of Egypt.
Who died and made Socrates king of philosophy? Plato.
Moving on, I shared with Liz M's whole hold on for a second moment over the Maritime Festival. And she got a kick out of that. Seriously. I do hope I get to meet you two in person one of these days. I'm figuring out how to get to Heroes Con in 2019, which as we record this is the last day, and we're not there. I need to make Shag jealous of my glorious head of hair, if nothing else. No, I'm not vain. Why do you ask? I also wanted to let you know that I've now listened to Thaumatrope on Spotify. Thanks for reminding me that that's a thing. While I don't think it'll be added to my rotation, I'm glad I listened to it, and it made me want to go back and listen to your podcast about it all over again. Keep up the wonderful work. With love, Vera Wild.
Excellent.
Any way we can trick people into downloading our episode twice, we've won.
Victory. That's our secret plan all along. Listen to the episode, go give them a download, and then give us a second download.
It's a win-win-win.
Dave McElvaney also sent us in feedback on the feedback episode, and he also wonders if that's too meta.
That's podcasterly.
No, that's it's destiny. He also talked about Mara and the Mainsail, checking out their music, and saying that, though I admit it's not for me, I did enjoy your discussion. I learned some things that I wouldn't have otherwise learned, and that's one of the best things about your podcast. Surprise learning. Qui docet discet. Who teaches, learns. Is axiomatic for teachers, and I was a high school teacher for 28 years, and I always enjoy learning something new. He continues, I am sorry to hear Professor Allen's breakup with a podcast that did not seem to welcome people with his viewpoint. Any breakup is a sad thing, whether it be with people, podcasts, or a fandom, but sometimes it has to happen.
As my friends in the Superman fan community have found out over the last few years, sometimes it has to happen, but it's always sad.
He continues, I did, after listening to your episode on Prince of Egypt, borrow the copy from my local library. Yes, support your local library. And I did enjoy it very much.
Yes.
Certainly it diverges in some places from the original source material, aka the Book of Exodus, but it is surely superior musically to the movie Ten Commandments, which also diverges from the source. I'm glad to hear that both of you seem to like my summary of Penguin Island. I read that novel when I was in high school, for fun, not as an assignment. And I don't think I've ever managed to describe it in a way that evoked interest from anyone before.
Well, first, of course, taste is taste. That's a firm belief here. And we appreciate any of our listeners who give a shot to Marin the Mainsail or Nate Allen.
Peter Franson. Justice.
Trusting us enough to try something is enough for us. And I reported to Dave that I was reading Penguin Island at that moment, solely based on his recommendation. No pressure. To which he replied, ha, I feel no pressure. Professor Allen is a grown bleep man capable of making his own reading choices. I liked the book as a teen. Your mileage may vary. Fortunately for all of us, I enjoyed the book as well.
Nice.
So I don't have to break up with Dave.
Exactly. Moving forward to our Halloween episodes, we were very careful about pulling together all of our feedback. Mostly the literal metric ton that came from Nathaniel Wayne. We thought he commented on almost every episode. Turns out that we missed one piece, and he in fact commented on every episode. So here is his feedback on The Fairy Realm. Dearest Middletons, dearest Nathaniel, I'm starting to think you custom built this miniseries for me. Don't dissuade me from this. Let me have my pleasant little delusion. But I love fairy stories. And as much as I love a good epic fantasy, at the end of the day, my favorite fantasy stories skew closer to fairy tales. Labyrinth, The Last Unicorn, a good chunk of Guillermo del Toro's filmography, etc. A more grounded world of understandable races is all well and good, but I adore arbitrary fairy rules that are that way just because... Well, that's the way it works.
It's a rule. Why?
Exactly.
Because it's a rule?
That's just how fairy is. And as has been a recurring thing in these feedbacks, I've worked fairies into my own writings, which is probably why I'm loving these episodes so much. I get to blubber about my own original creative ideas. Firstly, I have a fairy tale that I've been telling my daughter for years, which we call the Nightmare story. It's probably one of my favorite things when she asks for that one, and I get to cuddle up to her again and tell her about the creation of the black mare that corrupts dreams. Yeah.
Sweet.
Additionally, in a novel I've been shopping around for a few years, and may ultimately pull the trigger and self-publish, the world is cleanly divided between the technological progress of humans and the wild world of the forests where the fairies hold sway. Dig that? One of my favorite parts about writing that was digging through fairy lore. Between that and a nearly finished companion book, I've gotten to highlight pixies, dryads, redcaps, sprites, toadstool rings, nixies, and my own breed that I dubbed the Treshen. I also feature a Huldra briefly, but prominently in the novel, so I was delighted when M singled out that particular beastie. Though it's more straight-up mythology than folklore, I also heavily integrate my take on my daughter's namesake, the Morrigan. The Phantom Queen, goddess of war, bringer of doom. Yeah, her mother and I may have cooked our own goose with that particular name. I really enjoyed how broad and far-reaching the creatures you touched on were. The world is weird and has so many oddities in it, and I don't see fairy stories ever going away entirely. Keep up the amazing work. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne.
It's good to hear that that week we spent living secretly in his broom closet and under his bed really generated some good ideas for us. We do that for listeners.
Because we care.
We care. Now, when you found that abridged list of fae and then shortened it yourself even more for the episode, I realized just how vast and deep that realm is.
Oh, yeah. There is a project that's going on currently that I think is through like the National Library of Ireland. Of course, I hear about these things because I'm in library Facebook groups, where there is an archival move that librarians and academics and literary professors and scholars in Ireland are tasking the young people of rural villages to find the oldest living person that they can and ask them to tell them all of their fairy stories. So they are working on a collection. So it means that for most of those are people who were born somewhere between like 1927 and 1932. And they're getting a really deep snapshot. I think one of the numbers somewhere said that there had been 100,000 individually recorded stories, something like 17 days of hours of audio recording that had been collected. Yeah. And all of that is getting digitized and archived.
And turned into a podcast?
And at some point, it is going to be a freely accessible database of fairy tales from Ireland, told to traditionally in the oral style of Irish fairy tales.
Wow.
And it'll hopefully be available in a year or two.
That's awesome.
So just throwing that out there, that if we can hold on to that for a couple of years, there will be a huge, huge database of traditional tales that's going to be available through the Irish Library. Because what? Support your local library.
Yes. Noted monster fan Luke Giaconetti of the Earth Destruction Directive podcast wrote in also on that monstrous series of ours. Alan and M. Wanted to drop you folks a quick line to say that I really enjoyed your Dorkness to Nightmare series, as these episodes were very much in my areas of interest.
No, really? The startling monster horror tales of terror, man?
I have a few notes about some of the monsters you covered which I wanted to share. Zombies. George Romero's films do not reference the eating of brains, only of flesh. Brain eating entered popular culture with Dan O'Bannon's Return of the Living Dead in 1985. Itself as crucial to the 80s zombie scene as the original Night of the Living Dead was to the 70s.
Interesting.
Mummies. I love mummies as a monster, and I've ever since I was a little kid watching the Universal films and the Hammer ones with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. Mummies as reincarnated creatures is always interesting to me because it's a wholly Western trope which relies mostly on ancient Eastern religious tradition. This can be traced to the 1892 short story Lot Number 249 by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and codified a lot of the tropes of the genre, including the mummy being taken from Egypt to the West and reanimating the mummy through the brewing of strange leaves. Even when you have a work which puts the tropes on their head, they still exist, like The Mummy or Ramses the Damned by Anne Rice, which uses many classic mummy tropes but does each one slightly different than usual, resulting in a story which is both evocative and completely unlike any other mummy story I've ever read or watched. As far as having a lot of mummies at one time, that was something we pointed out, the finale of Stephen Sommers' The Mummy from 1999 has the main heavy, Imhotep, his lover Ankh-Sunamon, all of Imhotep's priests, and then a bunch of temple guards. So at least for a few minutes, you have a gaggle of mummies. Kelpies. Believe it or not, the modern incarnation of DuckTales,
woo-hoo,
actually has a great rendition of Kelpies in the episode The Missing Links of Moorshire. Scrooge, Huey Dewey Louie, Webby, Launchpad McQuack, and Flintheart Glomgold are transported to an alternative dimension which seems to be a mystical golf course in a fairy version of ancient Scotland.
Yes. Perfect, wonderful, incredible, legendary.
The only residents are a pair of brightly colored, seemingly friendly Kelpies named Brian and Bramble, who repeatedly try to trick the others to get on their backs to no avail. The two pastel-colored Kelpies are voiced by Tara Strong and Andrea Libman, who voiced Twilight Sparkle and Pinkie Pie on My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic.
That's hysterical. That's how you do a pop culture
stunt
reference
casting.
And how you do a mythological reference at the same time. That's brilliant.
Thanks for the fun series of episodes, Luke.
Hey, you know who else is on that show? David Tennant. I'm just saying.
Boom.
Just
He's everywhere. He's unstoppable.
Everywhere. Kyle Benning wrote in with some thoughts on the Nephilim episode of that miniseries, Professor and M. Have you guys ever read or done a Cliff Notes dive into the Book of Enoch? I'm getting caught up on the October mini episodes and just listened to the Lilith Nephilim episode. In my New Testament class in college, we spent a few class periods examining the Book of Enoch and angel/human offspring. This was due to one of Paul's letters that stressed that women need to keep their hair covered in church so as not to tempt man nor angel, in reference to the story of Enoch, which is alluded to in Genesis, of angels leaving heaven to breed with human women. It was a bit weird, but interesting stuff nonetheless. We had a whole section on books or stories that got left on the cutting room floor and didn't make it into the canonical Bible. If I remember correctly, the book we had covered that section also had a part about Saint Christopher and his life as either a giant or a man with a dog head. Made for some odd reading there for a week or two.
Yep. Yes, it does.
Hashtag keep Christianity weird.
Yes.
Back in ye olden days, it was weird. And then 14 centuries ago, it got real weird again.
Nathaniel Wayne wrote in again. This time to send feedback on the final episode of that miniseries, which, as you may recall, was a feedback episode. Hey, Middletons. I know. I'm feedback on feedback. I can't stop myself. But I'm going to make an attempt at being focused and more or less restrict things to the recommendations made by yourselves and other feedbackers. Pretty much only the vampire stuff, because it's where there was the most stuff I'd actually experienced. Reformed Vampire Support Group. Okay, this really does sound great. It's been a long time since I've read an actual book. Give it a try. Let the Right One In. Great film. One of my favorites. And I'm of two minds on the professor, touching on the question mark that hangs over the vampire character's gender. On the one hand, it's an aspect of the story I love, but on the other hand, the reveal of the uncertainty on that is so far into the film that it may count as a spoiler. I'm not really a big fan of Let Me In, the American remake, because despite keeping the story intact, I feel that there's a fundamental difference in the overall feel. The American version feels much more like a horror film from start to finish, whereas the original is more of a slow burn tragedy with horror elements, which I find far more interesting and unique. Plus, the American version chickened out on the gender issue, so that's an automatic point deduction.
You know, if you could just say, like, slow burn tragedy with horror elements, like, that's basically all of our favorite things.
Pretty much. Helsing. It was properly described as an interesting watch by one of your listeners, because there are cool ideas. Dracula being held in servitude to the Helsing family being the big one. But narratively, it just flies off the rails in the second half, abandoning plot lines and shoehorning in a final boss out of nowhere. It seemed like the second adaptation of the manga, Ultimate Helsing, stayed a bit closer to the source and was therefore more coherent, but it didn't really do enough better than the first for me to stick with it.
Well, welcome to anime. Like, that's the worst thing, where you can tell that, yes, they caught up to where the writer was in the manga, and then just went, pew, just completely jumped the shark, went to the moon. Yeah, that's rough. He continues, Vampire Hunter D. I will wholeheartedly recommend the newer Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust. Gorgeously animated, well-paced, amazing world. The 80s film is very 80s anime. I have also read the original book, which I'm not sure I can recommend because, as is often the case, the translation is just very dry. I'm glad I read it, but I was left wanting more movies and with no real interest in reading more of the series. Blood, the Last Vampire. So I guess this is one of those things where I'm in my own corner going, well, I don't really get what people love about this. It's not bad, but I was, well, not quite underwhelmed. Maybe just whelmed.
Adequately whelmed. Normally whelmed.
Just a good average amount of whelmed. Castlevania. Yes! Oh my gosh, yes! Even if you've never played the games, which I haven't, yes. And it's a double yes if you have played them. Gorgeous animation, fascinating characters on all sides, terrific voice work, amazing fight scenes. Season 2, Episode 7. Holy cow! It is just so good. Angel. I'm going to back M's assertion that it's better than Buffy on the whole. My short answer for why is overall build from season to season. Buffy goes very up and down after season 3, and season 7 might well be the weakest of them all, though the actual last episode is good stuff. Angel, by contrast, I honestly think got better with every season, yes, even season 3, and it ended up being one of my all-time favorite final episodes ever. The end point just says everything about the show. Endings are hard.
An Angel at Christian Kane. Young, little, cute, adorable Christian Cage.
Tiny, little, baby, tiny demon boy. Twilight. I'm not here to defend it. I'm just very over the complaint bandwagon. It's not a vampire story. It's a teen drama romance that the audience liked, but it wasn't made for us. Its influence never really crossed over into proper horror. Let's all agree to let go of this one. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne.
I think we had let it go.
For the most part.
And then they announced Robert Pattinson.
Okay. He is going to be an amazing Batman. Like, he's so good. Like,
the work that he has done since Twilight, he has taken a completely fascinating career path. He hasn't done anything big since then. But from what I understand, he has put in performance after performance after performance in small, indie, weird roles that actually required him to act.
Yeah, and he's very good at it. I just feel so bad about Twilight for both Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart because the writing was so terrible, and more than the writing, honestly, the directing. Those movies are horrendously directed. They're just ugly. They're just horrible and ugly and poorly directed, and oh, it's just bad. But I just feel so bad for both of them because they're both, like, really good actors. I think Pattinson more so than Stewart. I think
he has more range.
He has really good range. Just the fact that that was, like, a millstone around their necks for, like, a decade career-wise, super unfair.
Yeah. We did get an anonymous bit of feedback from a listener about some of the anime that had been recommended on that episode, pointing out that there are many anime that go beyond fan service, which we had talked about, and may have questionable content. And recommended us to exercise wisdom.
Yes. Sort of additional discernment, content. Yes. Additional content warnings on the animes, because some of them can get pretty extreme in terms of nudity and sexual jokes and things like that. So.
Dave McElvaney commented again on how much he enjoyed all the feedback we received from that series of episodes. Thank you. Now I have many, many things to check out as possible additions to my reading, listening, watching list. I love you both and all of your listeners, or at least the ones who sent feedback. Enjoy the upcoming holidays and get some rest. He meant 4th of July, right?
Right.
He meant Independence Day. Certainly couldn't have written that 6 months ago, and we're just now getting around to it.
That's ridiculous. Well, now we can get to some of our more recent episodes. First up, episode 27 with musician Nate Allen, a.k.a. Destroy Nate Allen, a.k.a. Good Saint Nathaniel. Nathaniel Wayne wrote in, of course, wondering when exactly he had become sainted. Well, I have to say I'm incredibly flattered, but wait, this is a different Nathaniel? Oh, okay. Never mind then. As always, this was a lovely conversation, and Nate was a very welcome voice in an already terrific podcast. Having not been raised in faith, I appreciate when those who were are able to open up about it and be frank and honest mm-hmm. about both the good and the bad. I don't have a ton more to add to this conversation, but it was a terrific listen, as it always is. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne.
And then we got this from Ron Smith on Twitter. Listening to the Nate Allen episode, and it is hitting me where I live. I wasn't exposed to church until I was 9, and that's when I went through a series of bruises, broken bones, sexual abuse, and assault, while the leadership looked the other way. The response I was given was, well, no one is perfect, and there's the slow work of God and the grace of God. I loathe a lot about Christianity, but I totally dig on Jesus. Helping people who have gone through similar trauma is why I'm in seminary. The credentials will be mostly decorative, but the education will help me have something to share when I'm asked. Thanks for doing the episode and giving voice to those of us who have been traumatized by the church and are now in the slow process of recovering.
Thank you for sharing that, Ron. Mm. We really appreciate your honesty.
And a quick note from a listener who preferred to remain anonymous. Professor and M, I just finished your episode interview with Nate Allen. I really don't want to say more for public consumption, but let me say that this really hit home with me. I mean, that's why Nate is doing what he is doing, and that's why we wanted him on the show to talk about what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. It's an important and intense message that we wanted the people who need to hear to hear.
To hear, yeah.
On the most recent episode, with a slightly lighter topic, you and Garrett Godfrey talked about Christian music, including, of course, that clip from your old radio show.
Yes.
And Garrett himself sent an email as a follow-up and said, wow, that accent. Seriously, I think the episode turned out well. By the way, you have a very engaged and interactive fan base. I was amazed how many folks liked and retweeted your tweets about this episode.
See, guys, listeners, you're awesome. You impressed another podcaster. Yes.
That's why we do this. To help our friends. To crush our enemies. To get likes from strangers on the internet.
To boost our flagging self-esteem. And we got this note from the Parliament of Rooks podcast. Professor Alan Fever coming at ya. And from podcasting's Michael Bailey. Alan and Em, I just finished the latest episode of Dorkness to Light, where I think I learned more about Christian-themed rock than I ever thought I would. For various reasons I don't feel the need to go into here, I never got into this branch of the musical tree. I will admit that part of that was my formerly ignorant opinion that this genre was inherently limiting, but I was kind of young at the time, so I throw myself on the mercy of the court. And of course, he's not that wrong in that assumption.
No, there is definitely a trend within Christian pop culture in general, Christian music specifically. Play it safe, stick with what you know. Don't take risks, which mm-hmm. in general are not usually adages that lead to great artistic yeah. expression. It is unfortunately common to find mediocre music yeah. in this subgenre.
Michael admits, to be fair, I was mainly exposed to this sort of music after my father went back to being a Southern Baptist after the death of my mother and his new wife. They were huge fans of Casting Crowns. It was a weird time.
Yeah, I can see that.
My first big takeaway from this episode is that I love rock music from the late 80s on a deep and meaningful level. While I was not overly moved by the content of the music from Alan's radio show, the sound of those songs made me extremely happy. One of the songs led me to think aloud, when did Depeche Mode cut a Christian album?
So do you think that this was Come Away With Me by Undercover?
I'm leaning that way, but could have been Adam Again.
Yeah.
I'm leaning towards Undercover.
I love Undercover.
Mike says this led to the epiphany that Christian music is not all the same. It made me appreciate it more, even if it was just from an artistic standpoint. It's kind of like not wanting to be Catholic, but really appreciating the architecture of cathedrals.
That is a very generous comparison, which I appreciate. You and I both have warm fuzzies towards Christian music and Christian pop culture in general, but we recognize that there is a good amount of sifting that needs to be done in order to find the gems.
The radio show was, on the other hand, that was amazing. Alan's accent took me by surprise. It took me by surprise. It took you by surprise. It took everyone by surprise.
When did you used to be Southern? And then I have to remember, oh, right, you lived in Virginia for like 15 years.
Alan's accent took me by surprise, and I found myself lulled into an almost hypnotic fugue state. Like, if that Alan told me to do something, I'd do it. No questions asked. So, if he ever wants to be a cult leader, there's his voice. The show was fun to listen to and appreciate M mentioning that most of us in this game were either in theater or radio at some point in our utes.
Or if you're Clint McElroy, both.
Yeah. More than anything, I loved Alan and his guests just geeking out about Christian rock. They were dropping the names of bands, and I recognized maybe one or two of them. Okay. One. Striper.
Obviously.
But they were yellow and black and metal, and they kind of stood out. Even though I was barely keeping up, the excitement and the joy that the conversation was absolutely bringing the people having it was infectious, and I just enjoyed the heck out of that segment. Count me in as one of those people who want to hear more of College Alan. Seriously. I could listen to that guy all day.
Okay, we're not going to do that. But another 40 minutes in a month or two.
Okay, maybe. That's a possibility. Thanks for the hard work and another great episode. I always get something out of the show that is different from any other podcast I listen to. Y'all are amazing, and I toast you from the veranda with my mint julep. Regards, Mike. Yeah, it's a P.S. I am now living by the mantra, it's all content. Yes, that is the life of the podcaster. You're going to a festival? How many episodes can we get?
You're going out to dinner with Shag? Bring an audio recorder.
Let's record this. Absolutely.
And this comment came in from Pat Sampson, another person we met last year at HeroesCon. Pat hosts a bunch of shows on the Longbox Crusade podcast feed, and he says, I am currently listening to the Dorkness to Light episode about Christian music. That is some real 80s sounding music in there. I need to look into some of these. I got into Christian music in early 2000s, so that era is just a blind spot. I'm definitely loving the songs and the vibe, plus your smooth DJ voice makes it even better.
Right, someone else for the cult. Yes!
you're just building your own little, like, subset. Like, this is great.
Dave McElvaney started his comments with a comic book joke, hoping that Garrett was not, in fact, Darkseid's mouthpiece, G. Gordon Godfrey. But onto the content of the episode, he said, well, this particular genre of music is not really for me. It's always fun to listen to people discussing a common interest that they are passionate about, even if I don't share that interest. I must say, if I'd heard it out of context, I don't think I'd ever have recognized the college radio voice as Alan. Neither would my one only child.
So weird. So weird, guys. And again, from Nathaniel Wayne. Hey there, Middletons. So that one was interesting. I think I've mentioned on some of your earlier times touching on Christian music that it's not my bag when it can be classified that way.
Yeah.
I have no issue with spiritual messages in music, but much like when I see a movie or show with a political point to make, I feel like if the focus is on finding a delivery for the message, rather than building a solid piece of work that you can weave the themes into, the results pretty much always suffer, to some degree. My question with any piece of art that's carrying a message I agree with is, would I still like it if it didn't pander to my sensibilities? Now, from the sound of the conversation, Alan and Garrett definitely had pieces that met that criteria, so don't take this as a blanket criticism. Just more an undercurrent for avoidance for such message-forward works. Any message, not just religious. Now, this would be where I confess to having had a radio show my freshman year of college.
I knew it.
And yes, I have the tapes.
Oh, my.
And no, you can't listen to them. Actually, nobody listened to them. The radio station was basically a joke because the broadcast signal was so weak, you couldn't even pick it up on campus. If you weren't listening to it through the radio's very poorly designed website or standing literally right outside the booth where I had it on a speaker, then you weren't hearing it at all. And thinking back, I had truly no theme or premise for my show whatsoever. It was just a mix of stuff I liked. Thematics be darned. Huh. Making a hodgepodge show of things that are of interest to Nathaniel. How
interesting.
I had fun with it, though, and when I transferred to a school that actually had a radio station that took itself seriously, I didn't bother trying to continue. They wanted me to have, like, a plan for what I was doing. That's just not me.
Anyone who sees Nathaniel on his Council of Geeks YouTube channel, the podcast feed, knows he isn't necessarily what we'd call a fan of research.
Or planning.
Yeah, not really in his toolbox. No. Yeah.
He continues, I hope your summers are off to a good start.
Hey, that's recent, relevant. We've caught up with our feedback.
And I managed to hook a friend onto your show, so now my goal is to pressure him into sending feedback. Wish me luck. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne.
Good luck. And yes, most college radio stations are a joke. That's their charm, I think. And I don't want to brag, but our 100 watts of superpower could blanket much of the entirety of the west end of Richmond. And on a clear day, it could even cross the James River and get to a couple of radios on the south side of town. Good times.
Real proud of that.
Good times. Good times.
The signal is out.
Yes. And our old friend Hugo Rivera also had a thing or two to say on that episode. Dear Professor and M, another great one. Takes me back to the days in Puerto Rico, when I could tell my very conservative mom that not all rock music was from the devil. Most of the rock that I listened was from neighboring churches that came to sing as special guests and sell cassette tapes, but were mostly English songs covered in Spanish with Christian lyrics.
Okay, see, I don't think I ever had that particular experience of like the...
You got multiple things happening there. For example, the first time I heard Every Breath You Take, it was not by the Police, but by a group I don't remember the name of and whose tapes I don't have anymore. Correction. I listened to the music and the chords, since the lyrics were in Spanish and of a Christian nature, which had nothing to do with the original intent of the song. These people were geniuses, because they were using catchy music that nowadays could probably have been slapped with some kind of suit for copyright infringement.
Oh yeah!
But the main source of Christian rock for me came from Stryper.
Of course.
I liked their style and their music, and those LPs themselves were beautiful. I still have most of their music, plus some of Michael Sweet's solo efforts. Another source of Christian music was a group called 33DC, or XXXIIIDC. Not as heavy, but more of a rock sound. And I love their music. The most recent Christian rock that I listened to was from Skillet. Good songs, cool riffs. My favorite album from them is Alive, which has a song named Never Surrender that I dig. You can add that to your list, Professor. I think I've gone on long enough. Thank you for everything you two do. Your faithful,
get it,
listener, Hugo Rivera. Those are a couple of great stories. And yes, these days, those pesky lawyers would definitely put an end to those cover versions of popular songs. And by the way, Skillet, yes, a pretty solid band. And that album, Awake, it lasted in the Billboard Top 200 album charts for something like a year and a half or 2 years. And all of that consistent album sales, couple thousand a week, added up to make it one of, if not the, best-selling Christian rock album ever.
It's a really good
album.
It's a really good album. So, This is a thing that my roommate attempted to put me on blast for literally yesterday.
Oh, no.
Because she made some joke about, well, what were you listening to in 2001 while everyone else was listening to Hit Me Baby One More Time? And I said, I don't know, Adam Again? And she just looked at me and just, like, shook her head and was like, God, I keep forgetting what a weird, insular childhood you had. And I was like, now, hang on a second. Adam Again is actually pretty good. And she just rolled her eyes at me like, oh yeah, you and your weird, churchy Christian music. And I had to look at her dead in the face and be like, hang on a second. Hang on a second, Miss Flyleaf. Miss P.O.D. You don't get to come into my house and dunk on all Christian music. And she's like,
you like some of it.
She was like, no, that's not the same. I was like, they literally sold their albums in my church bookstore next to The Best of Adam Again.
They are the same.
They're 100% the same. And sometimes they're good.
Yes.
So take that.
Now, we racked our brains about when we may have seen Skillet in concert, because we have to have.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way their paths and ours
didn't cross.
Like
it's
but we
happened.
Actually couldn't figure it out. We think maybe Cornerstone 2010. It's possible a fest before that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't surprise me if Mom has actually seen them more recently, because
well,
she goes
only,
to like Winter Jam
yeah,
and some of those other
like,
day-long things.
And know people more than us. She also definitely goes to more concerts than we do.
Yeah. One of the great things about her family moving here, now that her brother's here, she has someone to take to all of the Christian poppy type concerts that she wants to go to.
Yeah. And then occasionally go to some Icon for Hire, spike her hair up all crazy.
Exactly.
Get her
exactly.
My mom's awesome.
Well, that was a lot of awesome feedback from a lot of awesome feedbackers. You guys are all terrific. And even if you didn't feedback, quiz, do we still love them?
We do.
Okay, just checking. We love listeners. We know that this show occupies a teeny tiny niche within a teeny tiny niche. So we do value each and every one of you. And if you could all be like Nathaniel and trick a friend into listening.
And then maybe sending a piece of feedback.
Boom.
So wherever you come from within the big tent of the Christian world, or if you identify as being outside of that world, or just don't really know where you belong, you can come here. All are welcome.
Until next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites.
DorknessToLightBlog.blogspot.com
contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And DorknessToLight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or by searching iTunes for Relatively Geeky.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at dorknesstolight@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is by Anderson Kale. Check them out at andersonkale.com or search iTunes to purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.